periods. Let's talk about it, okay?
And so that's what virgin actually means.
Sisters gotta stick together.
What do I always say?
Listen to your pussy.
She never lies. Mm-mm.
Sister Strain here.
Your favorite feisty feminist filmmaking duo.
You're listening to The Sister Strain.
Periods. Menstruation. Let's talk about it.
Let's get right down to the bloody business of it.
Oh, yes. I love that. I love that. I love what you just did there. Let's all mention blood more, right?
Yeah.
I was just thinking while we were getting dressed and ready to come in here, I was thinking about the word menstruation. And then I was like, break the word down. Menstruation. It's like men's frustration. Men and frustration put together.
Let's not give them that much credit to any sort of ownership over our menses.
No, but in our society, it does feel very largely men's frustration, even though...
It's something we carry.
Yeah. Even though, yes, men are not the menstruators.
Let's dig right in.
Yeah.
We really want to talk about, you know, we're armed with some
stats
and data and facts today.
Book. We brought stats, we brought data, we brought facts.
As you can see, we've both well enjoyed it, and it's full of information. Highly recommend. What is it called?
It's called It's Only Blood by Anna Dalkvist. Maybe I'll just put
And what does it say? Shatter.
Hold on. Close up there to the camera. Okay.
Just read the rest of it. It says, Shattering the Taboo of Menstruation.
Yeah, and I think I started reading it. If there's two things we're really passionate about, I'm a little more passionate about menstruation, and Kat's a little more passionate about
the witch wound, but we'll get there. The witch child.
Another time.
Fill up multiple episodes
on that. So I'm excited we get to dig into... I mean, we both care about both of those things, but I'm excited we get to dig in today. Yes, when I first read this, I started putting my little notes in, and then I was getting halfway through, and I'm like, okay, there's kind of too many... like dog ears, but there's so many interesting things in here. She takes a very global look, like a worldwide study. She traveled to these places. She spoke to people who are living there in the communities to kind of understand the levels of shame around menstruation that exist in multiple cultures, religions,
communities. Well, I think, you know, menstruation can be such a frustrating issue for each and every one of us who menstruates, right? So it's hard to see sometimes even beyond our own frustrations or struggles in that regard. But then when you read a book like that, you're like, oh my God, I couldn't even imagine what some other menstruators in different places of the world, how it's like, it's amplified. It's way more.
Because we know, from our perspective, we can speak on it in our society and the shame that exists here and the inequities that exist here. But
It doesn't hold a candle to so many places in the world.
Yeah. And so, I mean, you really got to read this book and some others to gather all of the info. And we will put the book and some of the websites where we got some stats and data from in the write-ups, wherever you're listening to or reading this.
But we'll do a little debrief today.
Yeah, we'll dig into a couple things. And so we wanted to talk about, where did this all start? Why did this become a thing? I mean... it's varied over time of cultures and especially religion. It's changed and morphed and become the thing that it is. But I did this book and actually another book that we'll talk about another time. It's the gender data gap, which is a whole other topic for us to
also an to excellent dig into. Resource.
But in ancient Greek, Aristotle wrote that the female body was a mutilated male body. So his idea was that the female body was the male body turned inside out. In that case, the ovaries were the testicles. They were not given their own name until the 17th century. That was a tongue twister. Sometimes I wonder if I have a little bit of a lisp. I think that was just it coming out there. Maybe. The C's are tough for me.
Okay, move along.
Okay, back. Stay on point here. And the uterus was the female scrotum. His reasoning for why the scrotum was inside of the female body was because of a female deficiency in vital heat. We just weren't hot enough. our bodies to get those scrotums outside.
And what a pity. They're such a beautiful specimen.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, the scrotum is so much prettier than the vulvas.
As a quick aside, I always think about this whole Freudian theory that all women experience penis envy. And I said, what a way to twist that. I don't know of anyone else, but I have never seen a penis that was beautiful enough to make me wish it was mine. Okay. Like vulvas, God has changed my mind. Please, I'll do the research.
Vulvas, but. I'm sorry, vulvas?
Stunning, ethereal creatures.
Unique as a snowflake. Every single one, every size, shape, color. But they're stunning.
But what is just like a blatant example of how, you know, this genitalia, as a woman, has the ability to give life. It's a direct connection to the ethers.
Yeah.
And then there's a penis. Why, if someone was going to have envy of the other sexual genitalia, would it be women of a penis?
I don't know.
That just doesn't
We're gonna get a little deeper into that in a bit, but before we go on, I'm just gonna continue back with the work of our philosophers and scholars.
Yes.
His thing was that the male body was an ideal that women failed to live up to. So there we have, right there, stating from a philosopher that women were just not on par with men.
Centuries ago, we can't be, we're this and men are that. It has to be in comparison. By this comparison, you're lacking.
And now we'll go further, because there is Pliny the Elder, who derived a lot of his work from Aristotle. He wrote about he wrote an exposition of the destructive capacity of menstruation around 77 AD in his work of literature, Naturalis Historia. It's an encyclopedia that was spread widely across Europe. So this is a direct excerpt from, there I go with my seasoned teeth.
Okay.
Contact with it turns new wine sour. Crops touched by it become barren. Grass die, seeds in gardens are dried up, the fruit of trees fall off, the bright surface of mirrors in which it is merely reflected is dimmed, the edge of steel and the gleam of ivory are dulled, hives of bees die, even bronze and iron are at once seized by rust, and a horrible smell fills the air. So here we have it, folks. When you're menstruating, you're just destructive and disgusting. That's what he wrote.
And so that's centuries ago. Now, and it just, this stuff, you know, trickles down and reiterates.
And you know what? I'd like to say to that, like, women are goddamn magical, okay? We are. Yeah. We are extremely magical. I don't think we have the magical capabilities to cause this kind of destruction.
Oh, I don't know. I think some of the, you know,
I think
of the
we should.
Some of the witchcraft that was happening was women possibly using their blood to have crops grow.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could stand. Right?
I'm sure they were accused of that centuries later and considered witches for it.
Listen, all of my menstruating individuals out there, I think we could stand to be a lot more destructive. If they're already saying that we are, we might as well employ it.
We might as well just
dig in, own it, and really start causing some destruction.
Let's start with the patriarchy.
Yeah, big idea.
That's crazy.
Let's blood smear the patriarchy.
Yeah, if I could rub my menstrual blood all over the patriarchy and turn it into something beautiful, sure, I would.
For now, our small step is talking about it and putting it in our film.
Yes,
absolutely. If you haven't seen our film, Call the Blackbird, it'll be coming out in May. And there is, we added a period blood scene, because I think it's just important to keep seeing it.
Megan, you know, there's a little inspiration. Maybe, you know, I just got a brand new set of beautifully engorged, juicy vulvas. Maybe there should be like a little period.
If, for those who don't know, Megan is our best friend who creates
She creates these beautiful vulva earrings. And now I'm like, well, one, we stop the shame around menstruating by, you know, just showcasing the female genitalia a little bit more. But also, I'm like, maybe we could add a little blood in there.
Yeah.
Really?
If we really want,
an idea, Meg.
Some women who already looked at the vulvas last time we were out with them.
Dare I say, they're the ones that need the bloody ball.
I think so, yeah. They got to go bold. They got to go brazen.
Go all the way.
We're going to start wearing vulvas on everything.
Yeah.
Just really start spreading the good word of our magical snowflake vulvas.
Yeah, no two the same.
Okay, so anyway, magical, let's get back to some
magical creatures.
Yeah, they are. I won't take away from that by jumping to the next point.
No, that's but you're right. Back to the stats and data.
Okay,
we promised, and we're going
to
deliver.
Yeah. So I wanted to just look at like how many times does a woman individual menstruate in their life? How many products are they using? So I did a little look in and a little bit of math.
Tell us, Chrissy.
Okay, tell us. Here it is. On average, a woman will have 450 periods in her life. They will use around 22 items of sanitary products per cycle. So the guess is that it's around 11,000 period products used in a lifetime. Now, I'm just going to jump in right there and say, especially with the rates of like endometriosis and PCOS that we have in our society presently due to like environmental factors and what's in our food, etc. I'd venture to say it's more. I mean, between you and I, like our cycles are max a three-week space between two of them.
This is why they don't really do studies on women, because
they're too complicated.
There's too much difference in everyone's everyone's cycle and situation that like we could hardly be put down to one number of assumption
personally, you and I are like having like two cycles a month sometimes, or like spotting a lot of days in between.
Well, and also the age when menstruation stops is so varied for all menstruating individuals as well. So we really can't put it in number, but this is just sort of a little umbrella effect.
But if we went here, sorry, but if we went with this number, let's just like see what that works out to. So we did a period product campaign recently. So we had some monetary contributions that we took in that we went shopping for. And we took some time to gather some prices around and look for different sales so that we could kind of get the most product for the dollars. So we were breaking down like the cost per item in these packages from different locations. And so kind of what I found, the best price I found that was on sale was about 15 cents per item. The average, what we were seeing for most products when they weren't on sale was double that, about 30 cents per item. And then when we went to like the, you know, organic cotton premium items, it got up to like 49 cents per item. So that works out to be anywhere from about close to $4 to $12 per period per menstruating individual. And you look at that and you're like, okay, well, if you're listening from, you know, North America, then it's like, okay,
that's not so bad.
That's an added cost monthly that half the population has to pay, you know, with no assistance for it, that the other half of the population just doesn't have to pay. They can buy a meal out, multiple coffees or whatever.
Here. Some months, it's okay. I have that $12 or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Some months, things are a little tight. I'm like, oh, I really wish I didn't have to put out this money because I don't really have it. And I think, you know, that's coming from a privileged perspective where I would consider myself an individual who tend to be able to provide for myself the things that I need. There are so many people, one in our own country, in North America, who struggle so much that $12 is the difference between them being able to keep their heat on or feed their children or, you know, provide themselves menstruation products. And that's just in North America. This book is great in that it takes us more global to consider the experience of menstruators in other countries and cultures where that $12 is completely impossible. It's not even on the table.
Well, in comparison, it's like that. Not only does that $12 probably increase quite a bit just based on accessibility and what it takes to get those products to that location, but on top of that, you're looking at their income in comparison to the cost of those products, and like it doesn't add up of being able to afford it. And also, I mean, a lot of people their income hardly sustaining life already.
As it is, and then that's
especially if there's family, you know, children involved. Yeah. You really do need to. Sorry, I was just checking. We hooked up a third mic, and then I just realized that it was on, and I'm like, wait, did I turn the right mic off? So just a little technical.
We're good.
Yeah, I think we're good.
Okay, keep going.
But can you hear us? Can you hear us?
Okay, you share those facts.
Okay, so you really got to read the book and do some more research. But this is just a small snapshot of the global impact. And I did want to say that one of the reasons we are so passionate about menstruation is when there are barriers to access, it stops young individuals from being able to fully embrace their education.
education being most important, but also things like sports or social opportunity. If they're not able to go out and experience opportunities like that, that build leadership and self-confidence and that mm-hmm. Sense of community and togetherness, they're automatically stifled. And, you know, education being the biggest thing. Girls who don't receive proper education have no idea of what they should be aiming for in life.
Yeah.
So they end up settling for much less than they deserve
because they don't have options. And we'll dig into a couple more like trickle down effects from that in a mm-hmm. sec. But to start, to get us in here, I'm just going to read a couple facts. So in Brazil, 25% of schoolgirls miss school during their period. 20% of girls from rural Dominican Republic miss 2 to 3 days of school each cycle. In Venezuela, refugees and migrant workers that lack government aid, a package of tampons can cost up to 3 months of their salary. The math doesn't add up. In Nigeria, it's estimated that 37 million women and girls experience period poverty and therefore a lot of gender inequalities, which we're going to get to in a bit. Now in India, 60% of girls miss school. 79% faced low levels of confidence due to menstruating, 44% felt humiliated and embarrassed by it, and only 13% of girls were even aware of menstruation prior to their menarche. That's how you say it, right? Menarche? So menarche being the first time you menstruate. So the shame is so deeply rooted in the culture that the conversations aren't even had with the young, young menstruating individuals mm-hmm. before it comes upon them, and they don't actually know what it is that's happening. And so we wanted to talk about that, especially, and she goes into a lot of detail of areas of Africa and India and how much it affects menstruating individuals. And when we look at the younger perspective, it's like, one, missing school. So that's a huge thing. Mm-hmm. You're missing out on your education. Two, it does make you more, once it's known in the small communities that you are menstruating, it does open up.
Sort of makes you a sitting duck for assault.
Yeah, for sexual assault. On top of that, a lot of areas where there are, barriers to access for product, there's also barriers to access to water. So a lot of the individual homes in these communities don't actually have restroom
private
capabilities.
Washroom space.
There's communal restrooms that that the houses in that area kind of go to. In that case, it's like, if any of these girls or women or menstruating individuals need to access a restroom in the night, obviously we can, the same as a woman walking alone at night, even in North America, mm-hmm. it sets you up for the opportunity to be a victim of assault, attack, sometimes even rape, just for going to try and access locations where you can kind of take mm-hmm. care of your menstrual cycle.
And beyond that, we watched a documentary about this, very specifically about menstruators in India. And it's like, this is, I'll get, like, sort of a symptom is not having the period product of a deeper disease, because even when they do have something they can use, the problem is that they still won't go to school, because if anyone saw them put the period product in the garbage, or if someone came into the bathroom mm-hmm. space after and saw a pad or, you know, period of blood, it would still be so shameful that that person would be, like, condemned from society.
And I think there was talk of, like, they were having issues with plumbing because they were getting flushed. And then also in one of the schools, it was like the girls had figured out there was, like, a kind of brick that moved, and they were putting the products in behind, the kind of, like, hiding it in different cubbies. Yeah. Because, like, you go to the bathroom and, like, you can have these products, but they can't be seen anywhere. It is unacceptable for it to be seen.
And so the biggest problem here isn't actually lack of access. It's the shame. It's the shame and stigma around menstruating altogether, because if we did not have that shame and stigma, mm-hmm. then we would not have these struggles in our societies of menstruators, one, not having proper care for their menstruation, or feeling like, even if they do, they have to hide it, or they still have to sit out from opportunities in life because they're experiencing it. So it's much deeper than that.
And when we talk about the shame and stigma, I mean, I mentioned we did a period product donation drive recently. And I mean, God love him, our own father was like, well, I'll give you some money. You can go shopping. Like, I'm not going to the store and picking up period products. Like,
and we needled him. We did multiple times. Like, yeah. No, we won't accept your money. All three of us, we're going to be big boys, okay? We're going to go. We're going to go to the store. We're going to buy some tampons together. Yeah.
But, I mean, even for that, so it's like we had these donation drop boxes, but I had to go and add, or I maybe not had to. I did. In order to get past that barrier, I went and added a QR code where running it through like our company business or our company website, people could scan the QR code and make a monetary donation that we would collect and then go shopping for them. Because I was like, well, there's going to be, I imagine, a lot of men who are like, well, I would have supported it, but like, I don't feel comfortable going to get it. So, yeah. But, and they did. There were gentlemen who tapped on a donation for us to shop for them. So.
And that's also amazing. And yeah.
We appreciate that. It's just...
But the question is like, what's going to happen if you are seen buying a box of tampons? Like, are you worried that someone's going to perceive you as having a period? And also, why is that so shameful to you?
Yeah.
If you are worried about carrying that one day in one little moment for buying a box of tampons, imagine
think
the
about
shame
what
that's
the menstruating individuals have to carry every single month of the majority of your
life.
Yeah,
and this is, you know, it's amplified in certain places. Again, like India, where if a person is menstruating, they cannot eat with their family.
Mm-hmm.
They cannot go to any place of worship. For a wife, their husband cannot touch the blood because it is seen as dangerous and vile.
Yeah.
Like these things, you know, this, and that and particularly like roused me up because I'm like, you know, with women not being allowed in holy spaces in different cultures when they're menstruating, it's like, so if you're in a holy space and you believe in God or whatever that figure is, right? The fact that a menstruator is able to menstruate means they are given what I would consider then the God-given gift to create life, right? How is that shunned and condemned in holy spaces when it should be considered the holiest of gifts of that individual? It's pretty wild.
When you think about, and the cow it affects too, it's like, that's a big psychological stress just to go through and deal with that shame, deal with the consequences of it. The social stigma of it, workplace discrimination, because like if you have to go to work and that's a part of your lifestyle, it's like you have to learn how to navigate that so you don't have to miss work so you can still support your family. Obviously, we talked about a lot of school dropouts. And then on top of that is the health risk, which is a big thing because we're like, what is being used? If there is no access to
hygiene
products that we know and have accepted as
safe
the norm,
and standard,
what is being used instead? And one of the things I was looking up, it's newspaper, leaves, breadcrumbs, rags. And I think we can understand how any one of these things would probably cause a lot of
irritation.
Yeah. Especially in areas where there's a lot of humidity in the weather.
Mm-hmm.
And then someone had spoken to us too about when we were doing the drive, they're like, well, what about like reusable menstrual cups or reusable pads? Because then, they would have access to stuff that they could, it's more economic. And then also just like you give it to them, you know, to these individuals once and they can still reuse it. Sorry, I got it like,
no,
I caught it so annoying. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry.
You're talking too much. You're talking too much today. I think that's what it is.
So they're like, oh, the reusable stuff. But the problem with
I'm not talking too much because you're only talking too much over me.
Okay.
Let's clarify that because I would never tell a woman she's talking too much.
Okay. So the problem with that is that usually where there's barriers to access for period products, and we've touched on this a little bit already, there's also barriers to access to clean water. And so if you're using these items or reusing them, as is the intention with them, and not sterilizing them, once again, we have health risk for health issues for infection, like vaginal infections. And a big thing that we were kind of blown away by in when we read the book was specifically in India, I think as it's known, there's a lot of textile factories in India. And I think, and I read this in a study, there was 500 textile factories in India, or at least that were part of this kind of study. That's a lot of menstruating individuals working in a lot of factories. But they did a study on it, and 70% of the menstruating individuals that they interviewed in those 500 factories had issues with infection, And we were reading why it's, they use, they call it jute, I think, or jute, J-O-O-T.
Essentially the scraps of whatever project they're working on that sort of gets thrown on the floor. The
fabric scraps.
Swept into the corners. It's dusty. It's filthy.
So it's sitting there.
Got chemicals on
for,
it.
Yeah. For how long chemicals, dyes,
Who knows what?
These and also, these are very humid locations too. And so these women are using that as period products because that's what they have access to. That's what's around. That's what they're seeing is accessible.
And not going to work is not an option during and your then, period.
But can you imagine you already are facing issues with just getting the product and then you find a solution, but then that on top of the expenses of your life already causes infection. And I imagine it's probably difficult to get treatment for a lot of them because that would cost money.
I imagine you most likely are just having to deal with whatever consequence arises from having to use
horrifying.
That. So it's uncomfortable,
500
dangerous.
Factories, 70% of the individuals interviewed. That's insane.
And again, I'll reiterate the bigger problem here being the shame and the stigma because our society should be set up, you know, menstruating individuals make 50% of the population. So why is our society not set up to support these individuals? Yeah. Why is it some silent shame we are condemned to carry alone and, you know, and be ridiculed or assaulted or just, you know, forced to bear consequences like infection and ill health.
The fact that like municipalities and government haven't done more for it, knowing that there is a clear disparity here. Non-menstruating individuals don't have to take on the cost or the, you know, the efforts of this. Menstruating individuals have to take on an extra cost every single month or more.
It's countries, it's cultures, it's everyone, every place in the world. We should recognize this is not new. It's not something that's just happened.
But there should
this
be
is
like
since the dawn of time. This is an experience that people who menstruate face. It is common knowledge. It exists for the ability of those individuals to be able to give life. Not entirely, if you don't want to. I'm just saying the fact that we have the ability to give life to keep populations going.
Yeah.
And without that, the world ends, essentially. And yet we're still shoved in corners, spit on for this, and told to deal with it ourselves. Like we were talking about, you know, even here, we're supposed to, when you're menstruating, no one needs to know about that. It is your silent plight. You go to work, you deal with the kids, you do whatever activities you need to do. You're not supposed to talk about it. You don't complain. You know, you just act like it's not happening, regardless of, you know, some women experience incredibly intense and painful PMS and various other symptoms during and before their menstruation around that time. And again, it's a silent plight because if we do speak about it, one, it's, you know, like, shh, we don't talk about
that. Did you mention the red tents already?
No, Krissa, I'm getting there. Krissa's trying to be bossy right now. I've been letting her prattle on with her stats and data, and she's trying to rush me through.
No, I was going to add a point, and then I was like, oh, we talked about this, and I can't remember if we talked about it in this setting or if we just talked about this before. If my
Someone's
point
feeling really bossy today.
If my point makes it, okay, just continue. You're seeing a lot of sister
shit. You cut me off, and now I forget what I was saying. Anyway, and if a you know a woman does have a moment where, you know, whatever's happening inside of her body, the storm that's raging does affect her mood or how she reacts to something, then you know that's the perfect ammo to say this is why women can't lead. Women get they're too emotional, they can't handle themselves because they have a period.
Yeah, we have to act like it doesn't. Like it doesn't happen, like it doesn't exist, because then it's counted as one more like weakness against the feminine and why they can't do what the men do.
Yeah, exactly. And so again, the real disease here is shame and stigma. And so I don't know if anyone has heard of the concept of a red tent, which is actually stems to something very beautiful in ancient cultures. In Greek, the Romans, Egyptians, even some indigenous cultures would have red tents, which were essentially an oasis for groups of women when they were menstruating, you know, because often in small groups, women would cycle together. So it was this sacred and celebrated time where these women would be relieved of their usual duties and they would gather in this tent and they would, you know, it would be beautifully decorated with red fabrics and candles. And it was a sanctuary. Essentially,
imagine?
They would dance and sing and share stories and just like, there was no shame. It was celebrated. Celebrate their own physical and emotional health and cycle and put themselves first. And it was actually considered a highly revered time in these communities because you know, at that place in life, women were seen as having a connection to the ethers through our life portal and being deeply innately full of wisdom. So
your life
givers.
It would be
celebrated and excited that, like, oh, what will they come back with after this journey, after this quest they go on together, right? And now let's think about today, again, in a documentary watched. These tents exist somewhere, but they are not celebratory. They are not a safe community space for women to come together and share and experience this, you know, physical situation together. In places like India, there are tents where menstruators are sent, regardless of their age, health, and ability, sent to these tents in isolation to have their menstruation without bothering or affecting anyone else.
Out of mind.
Once again, the no care or support for feeding themselves or healthy practices, no protection.
Yeah, because they're left there alone.
No protection.
So, you know.
So imagine, a menstruator any age could be sent there on their own.
Mm-hmm.
No one helping them, no one guiding them, no one there to listen to them or, you know, just. So it's like taking this beautiful concept and bastardizing it into this disgusting way of shaming mm-hmm. and condemning. And isn't that just, once again, the whole theme of the topic here is like at some point in the world, in goddess culture, in the matriarchal societies, menstruators were celebrated and mm-hmm. honored and revered for this beautiful ability that we have and this regenerative cycle we go through to shed, mm-hmm. to renew, to, you know, to be able to give life.
But like most things in life, especially in the patriarchal setup of our society, it's power. It's about power.
So all of those things were seen at some point as too damn powerful. And the best way to strip someone of their sense of divinity and honor in themselves is to take the thing they feel is beautiful and celebrated and make them feel shame for it.
Yeah. And I won't go too far into it, but if you do happen to read this book, which we keep suggesting, there's a part in there. There's a tribe, and I'm not gonna quote specifics because I read this a little bit ago, but there is an area of the world where there is a tribe that does monthly like mutilation to their male genitals in order to bleed, with cycles with the women because they feel, you know, that's important. And so there's a little bit of vulva envy out there too, guys.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of envy.
I think we could all understand why, once again.
Yeah.
The vulva is a steady, ethereal creature.
No, we should all be happy with the parts that were made and they should all be equally beautiful. So what can we do? Talk about it. That's what we can do. We can keep talking about it.
I think it's no small coincidence that more and more women are feeling called to have women's circles, have sharing spaces, mm-hmm. creating safe spaces for multiple women. You know, in a society that's depicted women as very catty and jealous and competitive towards one another, we're starting to see through that bullshit mm-hmm. and recognize any space most of us have been in where there's multiple women and we're sharing and we're celebrating ourselves and, you know, focusing on the female perspective. We feel empowered.
Yeah.
We rise. We feel like a beautiful sense of fullness and fulfillment. And so I think, you know, we're kind of awakening to that, this lie that we've been sold. We're seeing through the cracks and more women, mm-hmm. more people are called to create these sharing celebratory spaces.
Yeah. But we can also take a moment to acknowledge that a lot of our ancestors, like through colonization, shushed and took away a lot of these practices and ceremonies and gatherings out of fear of power.
And so that fear has been passed down generationally.
And so we're calling back to it, but like, thank you to the brave cultures, communities, areas that kind of kept it going, that have kept those flames going, that have kept those practices,
these
those
concepts
ceremonies,
aren't new,
those,
right? They're being relearned. And dare I say, yes, maybe we all inherited the fear our ancestors carried for creating these spaces, but mm-hmm. we also carried the memory, the deep memory and reverence of them. And that is why we're starting to feel called. You're like, oh, I want to be in beautiful spaces with more women sharing stories. Yeah. Why do you feel that in your bones? And I think I'm not the only one. I think a lot of women are starting to feel that remembrance and waking up. Yeah. And it's no small feat and it's not coincidental. Yeah.
But thank you to the cultures
who have kept it going
so we can see what that is. So we have access to learning about it and then bringing it into our lives. I did want to do one more note on here. We've talked a little bit about the period product donation drive that we carried out over the month of March. All the products are being delivered this weekend, which we're really excited about. Our community really came out and came behind us.
It was
us.
A big feat. It was sort of a last-minute decision. Carissa saw this, call for campaigners and people to participate.
To join an initiative. But we did learn, so we're really excited about what we brought in. I'm thankful mm-hmm. for everyone who kind of came out and helped support it.
We created some fun events, and our community really stepped up.
Yeah.
We had such great experiences, again, of safe spaces where we had these conversations, and it was beautiful to see.
But we did learn we did learn some lessons on the way, and we've said in our journey of feminism, we're very passionate about the plight of women and girls, but we are still learning a lot about being intersectional feminists and how we be more mindful. And there were some things that were brought to our attention during the campaign.
Language.
Yeah, the use of language, how powerful language can be, and also how like simple words can really change the meaning of something. Mm-hmm. And so for our, there was a couple specific, I just said it, ours. The word our. And we were kind of utilizing the word our as in like relatability. We're all, we're all sisters.
We menstruate.
We're all, the products are staying within Canada, especially with what's happening in the States. I think people wanted to know that their donations were kind of staying to support Canada. And so we had used the word our. The problem with that is that the word our denotes ownership, which is something that we really like did not think about. Mm-hmm. And we were like, yeah, that's a big one. We use the word our a lot in the campaign to be.
But we should be specific. The campaign is to support northern communities in Canada that have barriers to access. Mm-hmm. So saying our is representing that those communities belong to us.
Yeah.
Right.
We're working with, and they are specifically going to support Indigenous communities. So, that's clearly very dangerous in an area where, and especially using the word Canadian too, where our Northern Canadian communities, denoting ownership over Indigenous communities, and also, the use of referring to them as Canadian communities because they were here first.
I want to be clear in the learning. The statement we had used, and we thought this would be a celebratory kind expression, was our Northern Canadian sisters, right? So there being two problems there. Our denotes ownership, which is wrong, and then Canadian suggests that those communities deem themselves Canadian and they're within our community, and sometimes they do not.
And the third one was the use of sisters. Mm-hmm. Menstruating individuals, especially a lot of Indigenous communities don't...
they don't have only two genders.
The colonized gender binaries. There's a lot, the two-spirit or non-binary. It's not for us to kind of specify that it's girls and women. There's a lot of menstruators. And so that was something very clear for us, to use the word menstruators. We can still be passionate and supportive of the often female experience in our patriarchal society. But being very mindful of the language that we use to be inclusive, especially when we're working with certain marginalized communities where that can be very dangerous. And also noting that the initiative, the organization we're working with, like they are very cautious and careful about the relationships they've built and the communities that they're supporting. So us kind of putting publicity out in affiliation with them,
directly affects how they're being perceived in their processes. And we wanted to share this because it's uncomfortable to get that feedback, right? You think, oh, I want to do good. I'm doing this campaign. And then you get told that you've, unintentionally done something
dangerous.
Wrong, right? Yeah. It feels bad. But we wanted to share this because we all have to get to a space where we have to be open to those conversations. One, the most important thing was this company was so lovely to have the conversation and very kindly and politely show us mm-hmm. where we misstepped and guide us towards the appropriate language. And they didn't have to do that,
which
right?
we acknowledge in the journey of intersectionalism, and that it is our job. It is our job to do the research, to study, to learn the correct and most appropriate way to speak, especially when we're working with different communities. That is our job. And we can't put that on individuals from those marginalized communities to teach us the way that is for us. So I think we were a little disappointed in ourselves that we had to be told about it. But that being said, so thankful that they were kind.
You don't know until you learn.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it felt important to us to make this note, because I think it's really important for me and Krista. We feel I'm learning now so that mm-hmm. I can help teach.
Yeah.
So we wanted to provide this opportunity
so that
to
we
use
can
our,
do better.
Our discomfort to say, well, we sort of had to go through the uncomfortable process to learn this lesson, but here we're going to share this wisdom now so that anyone listening would know to be able to avoid finding themselves in that situation.
And that's at the heart of it. The whole point of this podcast is us sharing more of the stuff that we're learning and soaking in and listening to, and to hope that it sparks dialogue with our listeners to write into us. contact@sisterstrain.com. Jump in on the dialogue. Tell us your thoughts. Tell us your opinions. Tell us areas where you think we could learn and grow and expand, or things that you want us to look into, things that you want to hear about. And let's all like learn and grow together.
And everybody go build a red tent.
Your beautiful own red tent.
Celebratory kind.
But other than that, let's keep talking about periods.
Yeah. Wow. You've been listening to The Sister Strain.
If you've got something you'd like to share with us, reach out to us. contact@sisterstrain.com.
Yours in sistership, The Sister Strain.